It was very hard, actually. I think I underestimated how hard it would be from going sort of 200 miles an hour. I mean, my last day, I worked my full 6 month notice. My last day, I worked till 8 o'clock in a board meeting. And then the next week, there was nothing. Ambitious can seem like a bad word, and I don't think it is. I don't think it is a bad word. I'm ambitious for my life, right? And within that, there's ambition for your career. And it's that realization that you're the person that can do something about that situation. And there's many ways to solve different situations, but you have agency. There's no white knight on a horse coming to save you. You're in control of your career and your life.
Everything is changing right now. How we work, how we live, how we lead. And if you're a leader, you're probably feeling it. The uncertainty, the pressure, maybe even the exhaustion. I'm Richard Stokes, and this is Mojo Under Fire. This podcast is about those defining moments, the leadership crucibles that either break leaders or forge them into the kind of magnetic forces others actually want to follow. When the old playbook stops working, when you realize you just can't work any harder, when something has to change, and that something is you. For the last 5 years, I've been having hundreds of conversations about how people find and keep their mojo, that quality that makes you successful, energetic, influential. But lately, these conversations have gone deeper because the challenges are bigger and the stakes are higher. So in this series, you're going to hear real stories from real leaders about their hardest moments and how they came through them. Not just what happened, but the truth of what it felt like, the approaches that actually worked, and the wisdom they'd share with you if you were sitting across the table from them. These conversations will give you something you can use, a different way of thinking about your own challenges, tools you can apply, perspectives that might shift how you lead. Because the best leadership development doesn't come from theory, it comes from learning how someone else navigated the fire and came out stronger. Today's guest is Lindsay Patterson. Lindsay is a seasoned marketing and media executive with extensive leadership experience across global organizations, most recently serving as chief people officer at WPP. Lindsay was also global CEO of WP's fastest growing media agency, Maxis, after an extraordinary period of success as their UK CEO, where happily we work together. I know her as a great leader and a great friend. Most recently, Lindsay served as senior independent non-exec director for the Women's Rugby World Cup, and she has various other NED positions. She's a passionate advocate for diversity and inclusion. Lindsay founded the Walk the Talk initiative for senior women whilst at WPP, and that reached over 3,000 female colleagues. And after leaving WPP in June of this year, Lindsay has been on what she describes as a power pause before beginning her next career chapter. I'm delighted she's here to share her experiences and wisdom with you all today. This is a conversation well worth your time. If it lands with you, do share it with another leader who might need to hear it. Okay, let's dive in. Lindsay, welcome to the Mojo podcast. Great to have you here. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really happy to see you.
I always start here, Lindsay. So, Mojo out of 10 today, right now, how is it?
Right now, the sun is shining. I'm going to give it a solid 8.
Okay, 8. And you noticed the sun being an important part of your mojo. Is that a constant factor, kind of what's going on with your environment?
I think I have realized more recently that sun, nature, sea, being outside brings me a lot of joy and calmness and perspective. And that's something I've learned actually quite recently, having had 31 years of mainly being in air conditioned offices or on a plane.
Right. And we're going to talk about that, some of the big changes that have happened for you recently. And you acknowledge a lot of that's been office space, lots of travel, which I'm sure we're going to come to. I mean, you've got some air miles, and we'll talk.
I'm getting through. And
to that point, love some of those words that came through there: joy, calm, perspective. Is that, when I say mojo, is that what lands for you? Your own definition of it?
I think joy is in there. I think it's something that's a spark that is uniquely you. It might sound like an oxymoron, but something that's quite centered, but for me, quite vibrant. My mojo is probably quite an extrovert, but in order to be extrovert and exude, I think mojo is kind of a magnetism actually to other people. And in order to be able to deploy that, you have to have your center nurtured and in a good place. Otherwise, you're just a fire. This is something positive. But I think mojo is a magnetism and a vibe. You know, I'm going to use an Ibiza term, but it's a vibe where I'm attracted to someone because of their mojo. And that mojo has to be that terribly overused word, authentic, right?
Right. Okay. Well, so say more about that, because I know it is a word that's bandied around a lot. But what does that authenticity mean to you in this?
That somebody, when someone says something, they follow up. And actually, I remember writing something about, it was thinking about my values some time ago, or words to describe me. And I used a really boring term, which is, it was either accountability or responsibility. But actually, I think that's really important. And I think if you say you're going to do something, so Rich, if you say, I'd love you to be on my podcast, I know that you mean it. And you know that I'll think about it and I'll try and show up in a good way. So I think your mojo can inspire a sense of trust, which is why it has to be authentic. Otherwise, it's just people saying words. And I think I can spot inauthentic people pretty quickly.
Right.
Yeah, I can read a room very well. And I will give you time if I believe you will give me time. And then I'm all in.
Oh, I love that. And I think we're really bridging into, you know, what I think is your leadership style, perhaps in there, Lindsay, as well, in terms of that importance, obviously, the authenticity, but the responsibility, accountability. You know, you came up with that phrase, walking the talk, or you use the phrase a lot. You know, I'm really going to walk the talk with this.
Yeah.
And if I'm saying I'm going to do something, I will follow through on it. So love that. So we're going to unpack much of this as we go through. Just as again, to support people listening who may not know you, what would be useful for people to know about you, Lindsay Patterson, the person, the leader, before we dive in?
So I am currently taking, and my friends laugh, a power pause. Pause from having power, if I ever had any. But I've worked for 31 years in marketing, advertising, in the media world, across pretty large organizations. Most recently, at 16 years at WPP running. We had the pleasure of working with you, Rich, as you know, at Maxis in the UK, then Maxis at a global level, which was a super fast, the fastest growing media agency in the world, part of the WPP stable. I then moved into a group role with Group M, and then 6 or 7 years, in fact, at WPP as global chief client officer, looking after the largest client relationships and building a central practice across WPP to help drive organic growth. And then most recently, as I kind of broadened out my leadership skills, still within that organization, I took on the role of chief people officer, which was a really fascinating couple of years. And I've now taken a step away to think about what's the next stage in my life, in my career. I think I have one more big job in me, but it's a job that's going to be different to those last 31 years, but hopefully using some of the skills and leadership qualities that I've employed in the past.
And so we're meeting at a real inflection point, a point of change. You know, the point of this podcast is all about change and navigating it and even embracing it. And you're in this, I love that phrase, the power pause right now.
I'm glad someone likes it. You're not laughing at it.
No, I love it. I mean, it describes it perfectly. And how does that help you? What's coming to me is maybe there's an opportunity in here to reflect on, you talk about, you know, 31 years of, and I know from working with you, very intense work. And now things are a bit quieter on the work front, at least. And how's that reflection time working for you?
It was very hard, actually. I think I underestimated how hard it would be from going sort of 200 miles an hour. I mean, my last day, I worked my full 6-month notice. My last day, I worked till 8 o'clock in a board meeting. And then the next week, there was nothing, which I deliberately kept quiet. But I think that was probably a mistake in hindsight, because I was so used to looking at my phone or being called or being needed. And I think the loss of structure and probably the loss of being needed was a lot. And I did have some coaching to help me consider the transition, to be really clear on why I was leaving, and to do some work on what what periods in my life or what attributes brought me joy or happiness, and also conversely, periods that didn't do that, to help me start thinking about the future. So I felt like I had tried to prepare quite well, but I still underestimated that initial impact. And now I'm in a much better, I've relaxed into it, Rich. I've got lots of trips. I had trips planned in September, October, November, December, but in the summer period, I think I overdid the let's just relax and not do anything. And I probably should have had a few more things lined up.
And they say that the mind is like a fast moving train. And if you want to slow down a fast moving train, you don't just stop it like that. You've got to ease it down. And I guess it might have felt, you know, from that navigating from that board meeting at 8 p.m. to the next day of, okay, what do I do now? Sounds like, you know, as you said, a lot. And that being, can you just dig into that being needed piece? Because I think that there's a lot in there in terms of our roles and identity. A lot of it's so tied up in our work.
Yeah, and it feels odd to say it, or I don't know if it shows hubris, but I figured out I quite liked being needed because I could solve things. I like solving things. I like supporting people, as you will know, like giving direction. I've always got an opinion. Or sometimes actually what I learned as you mature in your career, and certainly in my role as chief people officer, actually a lot of the time your role is actually just to listen to people and ask questions and maybe make suggestions, but not over-solve. I think early on I was solve, 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 and actually I've learned to listen more. But I was kind of always in demand, and whilst I'd sometimes roll my eyes about that, or my boss would ring me on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, actually it made me feel important, actually. Made me feel needed.
And thank you for that. There's a lot of honesty in there, Lindsay. I think not everyone would have the awareness of that and then offer it. So, I really appreciate that. You just talking about that shift, you know, obviously there was maybe from being chief client officer to chief people officer, this huge organization, over 100,000 people, some of the world's biggest clients. And going from, I'm here to solve, to I'm here to listen. How did you navigate that?
I think someone helpful did point out to me that that would be a good thing to do. They said, look, sometimes you just need to listen to me, which was good advice. And sometimes you could frame up the question. My predecessor, Jen, actually said, look, maybe ask someone, how can I help you today? Do you want me to just listen? Do you want me to offer suggestions? And then maybe check back in. What can I do next to help you? So actually being thoughtful about how you start and end conversations, I think I learned. Because I do think in the business world, we are quick. We, I don't know if I would use the word rush to solve, but we're fast. We're on it. You know, I just come back from I did a 2-day painting course. You'd be proud of me. I'm exploring my creative side at the Royal Academy. I thought, I'm just going to start high. I'll go to the Royal Academy. I mean, why not? They said every level, so they definitely got every level because I was a beginner. But, oh, my God, I had to really, like, keep talking to myself because everyone was faffing about and the teacher could have done a better job. She was amazing, but a lot controlling the class and people weren't listening. Someone had the wrong easel and I wanted to say to the organizer, no, there's two there and you don't need two there. You need one. And I was like, Lindsay, just take it down a notch.
Yeah.
I talk to myself quite a lot now.
Even, you know, when we worked together, you said, you know, Maxis at that time, the fastest growing media agency, and we were on a rocket at that time. And it was about speed. It was about fast. It was about don't have to have all the answers, just find a way and kind of get it done. And I guess that environment, that culture breeds that way of working, which can work really well for a time. And you recognize it might not always serve me.
Work that way. I think I've learned to alternate. And if you remember, we created as a leadership team working with all of the local market leaders, our own, what was our culture and what were our values? And we came up with, and happily, they spout out the word pace because pace, as you just said, was so important to us. But our values, I still remember them well, which is why an acronym always helps, but people that are passionate, agile, collaborative, and entrepreneurial. And that was actually a really interesting, we really believed in those values. They weren't a poster stuck on the wall. We collaborated on them together. We discussed them all. And I remember debating, not arguing, with Ajit and some of our other leaders from Southeast Asia about the word entrepreneurial. And they really argued the case for entrepreneurial. And I said, but, you know, we're part of WPP. We're a small part of a massive organization. How can we be entrepreneurial? Maybe we're intrapreneurial, which is just playing with words, actually trying to be too clever. But he, to be fair, in India, and actually I think it represented the Maxis culture in that market. But actually, I think it represents our culture anyway, and actually represents some of what I have as a leader. It was, we can do anything. So they were, a client would say, can you bid on the IPL and manage our sports team? Yes, we can. The answer was yes, we can. And then we will figure out how to do it. So I appreciated them arguing for it. And I think we embraced that as a team. And I think that idea of having agency, that idea of taking control, and yes, you can. And, you know, my husband always rolls his eyes, but I'm getting him to believe me or understand why I say it. I always say, it'll be fine. There's a problem. It'll be fine. Da, da, da. It'll be fine. And that's because I believe things will be fine, because I think there's always a solution and always a solve. And that's because what you realize, and as I was thinking about this podcast and challenges or themes of what I've overcome, it's about taking agency and taking action. It's that realization that you're the person that can do something about that situation. And there's many ways to solve different situations, but only you have agency. There's no white knight on a horse coming to save you. You're in control of your career and your life.
I love that philosophy, because I would absolutely adhere to that, in terms of, because it gives us, I said, agency. We can take responsibility. I am accountable. I'm effectively creating all of this around me. And it also pushes away things like, I think, blame.
Exactly.
Right? Like, also, someone else's job.
No, it's not helpful, blame.
Yeah.
And you've done it. You took agency of your whole life, and within it changed your career. I've got nothing but admiration for you, but only you could do that in partnership, you know, with your wife.
Yeah,
only
exactly. Yeah.
Other people could help enable those changes, your decision.
Yes, exactly. And it's amazing what you can do, whether it's change of career, life, situation. But that belief, that's the key for me, and trusting oneself in that. Let's just go a little bit further back in your leadership journey. Has there been a time when that belief has not been there, or it's been sorely tested? I'm getting into these areas of these crucible moments that we might talk about, where you kind of go in and you come out differently. So, and has belief, been tested?
Yeah, I think it has been tested. And that's when my mojo levels dip horribly, because I would say one of my superpowers is having confidence and imbuing confidence in other people, right? We can do it. We can do it together. I can do it. Having that vibrancy or that magnetism. So when I don't feel that, you know, I get quite low, as I'm sure my energy dips. I just get frustrated, and then you get stagnant and you kind of stop and you just go round and round in circles. I think I spent a long time at an agency, and I got to a level of managing partner, but I wanted more. I wanted more responsibility. I wanted to understand more about the business. You know, everyone, you know, I sort of smile ironically when, you know, people always want to understand the mysterious P&L. I mean, it's not that mysterious a P&L ever. It's but people always want to understand the P&L. So I remember there was like a pseudo, it wasn't the board, it wasn't the exco, it was like a managing partners board. It was just a pointless board of, so it felt like I was just put in the holding pattern. And that's because there was someone in a role above me who was very good at their job that certainly wasn't going anywhere. And I think I kind of wanted to push up to that role, but I didn't know how to do it. And I didn't really have the wherewithal to reach out or make a jump. And actually it was when the Maxis opportunity came up, and all of a sudden it was to be a CEO. And I thought, God, can I be a CEO? That's such a big title. And then when I realised what the job was and what the opportunity was, which was a challenge around within the Group M family, within the WPP family, and to me that was always the big opportunity, I felt very determined to try and do it. So I think I've often had periods where I feel a bit stuck, and then I make a big leap. And the same principle at Maxis when I was running the UK, and we had challenges at a global level, and I felt stuck and I felt frustrated with the leadership and with the direction. I felt like I was running like a hamster, and again, a common theme, running like a hamster on a wheel. So working really hard and really fast because I can be effective at what I do. But because there's some kind of block above me, that means you get both frustrated and stuck. So you have to then figure out different ways to get through it. The story there was that I couldn't figure out how to change the leadership of our organization without feeling disloyal to the organization. And actually what I've learned is actually if you're doing something in the best interest of the company, then it's always the right thing to do. But I think we often personally, especially if you're a people-led person, which I would say I am, that feels... You don't ever want to feel disingenuous. You don't ever want to question your own integrity, but yet you're stuck. So I have a lot of conflict when I think there can be a people issue with needing to do the right thing for the business versus feeling a challenge internally about talking about the person not being, in the right kind of role. So in that instance, I pivoted. I talked to my boss's boss. I kind of try to corral other members of the team. We just try to get on with success despite the challenges we had at a senior level. And actually none of those tactics worked in the end. So I think you're stuck, you try different things. And then I did the bravest thing, which is to say to my boss's boss, look, it's not getting any better. I'll do the job. Or if you're worried about someone doing the job, let me do the job or do it. I'm doing half of it anyway. And I got very firmly told off in the nicest possible way. The meeting broadly got shut down. I was told that lots of people would want that job, Lindsay, and made to feel stuff that morally felt bad to me, that I was doing it in an acquisitive way. Is that the right word? But in a way that was slightly unhelpful, whereas my intention was, and always is, what's in the best interests of the business. But I was made to feel that I personally said the wrong thing, which I found hard to understand. And I was given feedback the next day via someone else, which is always a joy, right?
Third-hand feedback.
Do it yourself, it'd be better. That I'd overstepped the line. And I was so cross. Shows you how old I was. I wrote a blog about what's this imaginary line? What's this line we step over and who decides what that line is? And it made me really cross. And then, 2 months later, that the person who was so offended by me suggesting a solution for the business basically said, yeah, sorry about that. And will you do the job? So it all turned out okay. But it really didn't make me knock my confidence, because I think as I chat about it, Rich, I think it made me feel bad about myself as a person. And actually all I was trying to do was what was in service of the business. And that was why I was frustrated. And by the way, I could have just left. Could have gone another great job somewhere else. So there was no personal gain really in it for me. But it did knock my confidence, because it made me think, well, maybe I can't ask for the promotion. Maybe I am too ambitious. Maybe I'm being a noisy, aggressive woman. Maybe I'm overestimating my abilities. Maybe I'm daft to think I could be a global CEO. So I think I probably slightly retreated a bit, kind of slightly put back in my box.
Wow. And thank you for unpacking that period, because, linking back to Maxis Pace values, what I got from there was a lot of your values that you know but were being questioned as part of that, whether it be ambition or integrity or being a people first. They were sort of, why are these being questioned? And just talk a bit about, as you said, being a woman senior in the media, advertising, marketing space, And asking for that kind of opportunity. Just talk a bit about that experience, because I think there's, you know, in the words you're using, here was me, maybe I was being too demanding, maybe I was being too aggressive. Now, these things would not be put to, I think, men often, but often to women. So talk a bit about that experience.
Yeah, I think there is still the stereotype that if you, and I do credit Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, years and years ago, which gave empirical evidence to the fact that women, you know, only put their hand up for a job if they can do 9 out of 10 qualities. A man will do it if they can do 2 or 3. So we overthink what it is that we might need to do. And this line about you can either be liked or you can be competent. So if you're really well liked, you're probably not that competent. And if you're really competent, then you're probably a bit of a bitch, you know. And actually, I always said I want to be like brilliant and loved. You know, I don't want to be liked and confident. And I believe you can be those two things. But I mean, I have nothing, only good things about the men that were in WPP and Group M, who all of whom helped me. But I think you had to be a very robust woman, and you had to make your voice heard. You had to kind of roll with the punches. You know, I can do a lot of chat about sport. I look back now on some of the moments where perhaps in today's environment, I would have called out actually pretty offensive comments or poor behavior. But at the time, you just kind of got on with it. But I think women always slightly have in their heads, despite the training we've done, despite the program Walk the Talk, which is all about getting rid of your imposter syndrome and in those annoying voices in your head, do slightly worry that they're being too ambitious. You know, ambitious can seem like a bad word, and I don't think it is. I don't think it is a bad word. I'm ambitious for my life, right? Mm. And within that, there's ambition for your career. And I was doing some work on my values during my Power Pause. And one of them is achievement. Mm. And I know when I do... what's the profiling where you have your light, the Hogan profile? I think ambition and achievement are like off off the charts.
Over-indexing.
Over-indexing, which can be good, but obviously has a dark side to it as well. But I think actually I just need to be at peace with those. And I hate it when other people's reactions are. Right now I'm looking at some other opportunities, and sometimes I feel, you know, the opportunities are, they're too small. They're very limiting. And I'm not going to take a small limiting job. I'll do something else in my life. And there are other roles. There's one I'm really interested in that is like a dream role, I think, so far, still investigating it. You know, role is probably a dream role. And it's a big title. And I have sensed a couple of people go, oh, well, almost managing my disappointment when I don't get it. And I'm like, can you just not do that? Because actually, maybe I can do it. And so I'm working hard to keep my confidence levels very high as I try and approach that. Because I think people do it out of care. They go, oh, that's a big job. And you think, well, and aren't I a great candidate for that big job?
And you sort of, because you've always talked about, and I'd love to talk a bit about the Walk the Talk program that started at Maxis and then came into WPP, and hundreds, thousands of women have been through that. But this sense of the cheerleaders, the supporters that are needed, and maybe especially for women, because there is, whether it's actual or perceived, the glass ceiling is in place, and asking for that raise or asking for that promotion is not always the most natural thing, because it's been discouraged throughout a girl and a woman's life to do that. So yeah, talk to me a bit about maybe first some of your supporters or cheerleaders, and then let's talk about kind of what you've created in some of these programs.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think women have to be smart and tactical and prepared for any meeting that involves an assessment or money. And for some reason, we all can feel quite shy around those. But actually arming yourself with facts is the most important thing that any woman can do. So actually the Walk the Talk program was deliberately designed. So not, let's forget external or cultural barriers. There are cultural barriers in some markets around the world, which are very limiting for women. And so I guess some older belief systems in countries like the UK that mean you might be expected to struggle to be a mother and someone with a strong career. And there's pay gaps, but we did a lot of work on that at Maxis. But actually in terms of the internal barriers, it's really just understanding how you might unleash true ambition, the steps that you might take to get there. And one really important exercise in it, going back to your point about supporters, and I always remember this, so there was an exercise, and we worked with a great company called Shine, was your allies. And there was a little box with you in the middle and six or eight boxes around you. The idea was to put a name of somebody that could help you in your career. And by the way, it couldn't just be eight friends that you have a glass of wine with, because that's too easy. And actually, I remember the first time I did it, I said, that feels a bit small, actually. What I'm going to do is I'm going to group them, and I'm going to have WACL women, so Women in Advertising Communication London, and I'm going to put five in there. I'm going to put men at WPP Leadership, and I'm going to put five in there, including, you know, Sorrel and CFO and everyone like that at the time. I'm going to have Women in America, because I had a global. And so I went round, and then you've got 40 allies who can all help you, but all who play different roles, because some will help you with connections, some will help you with internal reputation. And just being thoughtful and strategic about them, I think, is really important. So when I think about my supporters and allies, it's a really interesting point, the pause right now, because I always thought I was good at asking for help, because I would always give help and always ask people for a cup of coffee and make connections. I would say, again, that's one of my superpowers. But actually now I do it more so than ever. And I'm having to ask people if they can recommend anyone, if they'll introduce me. So I'm actually going a bit further, because it's outside of my core network, and saying, do you know anyone that works in this? Would you ask them if they'd mind having a coffee with me? So having lots of cups of coffee or virtual. And again, you have to prep for those meetings. So what I would do is, I don't want to let down the person that introduced me. I don't want it to be a meaningless meeting. So I'll research and do my preparation. But when you sit down and map out the market, and again, I say, be thoughtful, be strategic, be prepared for this role I'm looking at. It's in a category that's different to marketing, media, or advertising. I'm like, okay, well, who do I know here, and where do I know in the media world that's connected to it, and who might I know on boards that are connected? So I've mapped out the market, and I'm beginning to think who can help me. So I'm stretching that circle, and then I'm asking people like Stevie Spring would be a brilliant example, who actually was my first boss's boss at Young and Rubicon many years ago, who's the chair of many different organizations, asking her perspective on, and she gives great advice, Stevie. She's like, you haven't lived if you haven't been fired three times. So I haven't been fired three times. I think, God, I've underachieved. Maybe I should. But what she means is you're not pushing yourself. So push yourself out of your zones. Be thoughtful. Consider this lens. Have you thought about this? I'm asking lots of different people right now for their advice. I'm going to the previous chair of WPP to say, hey, can I have some time? I'm trying to think laterally about who might connect me in, understand what their perspective or how they experienced me, and therefore what they might say about me to another people. So I think there are allies everywhere if you look for them.
And I think in that, sorry, say again.
If you ask people for help.
There's a thing, I've actually written that down here, because I think, you know, doing the exercise, great, is a start, and then doing the thing, asking for help, which, you know, again, culturally, this does differ, but that asking for help can feel terribly exposing, creating a lot of vulnerability, because essentially it's saying, I don't know, asking for help. And look, when you were just describing that, look what I imagine you've been able to find out, and connections you've made, and closeness to getting to this role, if this is the one, and you're making it much more possible for yourself.
Yeah.
By doing that. So of course it makes sense.
I have agency. I'm doing whatever I can versus what I did to begin with, because my confidence was low, and because some people went, oh, that's a big job, and you haven't done X, I focused on what I didn't have for the role. And it's like, well, hang on a sec. What have I got for the role? You don't want to start a conversation in negative. I know I don't have this, but it's like, okay, I need to reframe that. I guess I think about what I would tell other people. I need to tell myself.
Yeah, but that is golden, Lindsay. That reframe that you've just done there from what I haven't got for this, but what I have got and how much I can do of this is, again, it's one of these ones I often use the phrase, it's simple but not easy to do that reframe. But what a gift it is to anyone who's listening to this, thinking about their next thing. And I feel a bit distant from it. How can I get closer to it? Well, you know, make that reframe and take agency, have a plan. I love that, you know, thoughtful, strategy, prepared. What a great three steps to be all of those things to move closer to that thing that you want next.
Yeah. And then any meeting, you know, it's any meeting, any pitch, you know, in the old days, if you prepare, you can be brilliant. Then on the day, you can be vibrant, interesting, da da da, and go, that reminds me of this, because you've done all of that preparation. No one can just rock up and be like wacky and brilliant. That superficiality does not.
May have seen it. Doesn't always work.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Exactly, exactly. And just into that sort of zone of, you know, when you're moving at 1,000 miles an hour with Maxis and then WPP, and it's client demands and it's new business and it's big, you know, big numbers we're talking about with lots attached to it. What has helped you in those moments when, I guess I'm talking about the pressure of the real challenge of maybe going into that meeting going, I've done my prep, but I'm still feeling a little bit a lack of confidence about me or the team or the product or the proposition. So when you're feeling the pressure, what supports you in that? And any examples maybe would be helpful if you can share.
Yeah, I think I work really hard to not go into a meeting unprepared, but it does happen. I remember a terrible client meeting with a client I'm really good friends with now. Actually, he texted me, WhatsApped me a couple of days ago because she was in London to say, so I'll arrange to see her on her next trip. And I think we knew we were on the back foot with that client. The leader was very both distant and protective. So everything's all right. Everything's all right. Everything's great. I know this client. It's fine. Arms around.
And I think this is the person that led that client relationship.
Yeah. 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 So trying to like break in or understand what was going on. Two or three agencies working on an account that hadn't seemed to have really connected or collaborated before, which, as you know, was an old culture, an old way of WPP working, which became much better under Mark's leadership and the leadership team with the values of collaboration and, you know, really making sure that we delivered for clients. But clearly that no one had really spoken in that. So the room was, the client was frosty. The internal team didn't seem to know each other very well. The leader was in denial. There was a research, somebody seemed quite angry, but it was my responsibility to be there. It was quite new into my role as chief client. I just have to sort of be the person that maybe I can reassure, we can make it all better. We can, you know, and I would say the meeting was split into thirds. The first was dreadful, just incoherent nonsense. Clients didn't look happy. The second actually was pretty amazing with some new whizzy thing that one of our agencies showed that was super impressive. But, you know, you can imagine the client's like, why have I not seen this before? You know the drill. And then the last third was pretty dreadful, where there were scores given, I think, and our team became really defensive and argued with the scores. And then somebody wanted to speak and one of the CEOs said, no, let them speak. And I was thinking, I'm not really sure it's going to be of benefit or positive. And they spoke and it was a disaster. And then the client asked me and one of the CEOs for a meeting after the meeting where they basically fired us. So that was a low point. And, you know, the lesson is never believe someone that says, I've got this. It's all okay. Don't worry about it. It's a bit like when you go into a pitch and it's the person that says, oh, I don't need to rehearse. I'm great at pitching. Trust me. And they get up on stage. So actually, I never believe that, or I would always over prepare in that circumstance. But yeah, it's trying to be, go back to that word authentic in a meeting where you are aware it is a car crash is quite challenging. Now, it was a new client and I was new in my role, so that gave me some leeway. And yeah. I think at a personal level, she could sense my pain. I could sense she'd come to do a really difficult job and we were going to be fired effectively at the end of the meeting anyway. And actually, I grew a really tight and close to relationship with her because she gave us really honest feedback and we met again and we did rebuild that relationship.
Wow. So out of that, as you said, a meeting of some thirds, most of them dreadful, getting fired, but you were able to, and I get this real sense, Lindsay, of you staying in, you know, this is what I can control. This is my agency. I'm present, you know, for me and that relationship with that other person. I'm getting a very much a person to person relationship. What else? What other tidbits can you give us that helped you then rebuild that relationship?
I think there is definitely something about a personal commitment. And I would say one of the strengths is, you know, I like clients, most clients, I like people. I think there's always something to admire in general about people. And I kind of want to get to know, I want to deliver for them. I will put my neck on the line if they're a good client. And I've always had this expression of, you know, if a client phones me 11 o'clock at night, and this definitely happened to me in my early days of media when we used to plan and buy media in a more linear way, and they've got a massive problem with something that's in the newspapers the next day, how do we pull that ad? Can we pull that ad? What can we do to rescue it? So I think that was probably a Friday morning. We had to pull stuff out of Saturday, which we managed. And that's by getting a team of people working, by having the contacts, by calling in favors. Someone calling at 11. We had an ad in the Super Bowl on Channel 4 when they had it. I mean, that big spot. They didn't have the rights, turns out, for the UK. They only bought them for the US. And it was a 2-minute ad. You can imagine how expensive that was. So trying to, like, in those days, having to get someone to go in and like cut into the reel to take the, we did it and we minimized that fine. So I would say being there in a crisis, because again, you have, right, what can I do? Who can I phone? And I will do hook or crook to get them out of it. And then also wanting to be that person who, when something goes spectacularly well, the client wants to go out and celebrate with you and they want to, because you're a fun, good, nice person. So I think being there in the trenches and then being there for the good time, and you've got to do both. You can't just be there for the good times. Mm. You've got to survive in crises together. Often binds you together. And that's where you show your true commitment.
Yeah, I love that. And I was getting that, we talked about earlier, I got brilliance and I got loved out of there. So you're doing your job brilliantly and loved by this client. Not just for that, but for other reasons. And the value of the relationship that you'd built up, not just with the client, but then with the other people in that particular time of media that, you know, I need someone from Channel 4 to really do us a solid here, because otherwise this is a big, big issue. And that doesn't just happen like that. That sort of trust doesn't get built in one phone call. It's about what you've invested over time in that relationship.
Exactly. And I remember, you know, other example of Maxis in the UK, and we won BT. We won BT really because of the power of Group M. So I lent really hard to that parent organization, and I take my hat off to Nick, to Theco, and to Mark Collins, who really helped me. And because I'd had a relationship personally with BT at a previous agency, they knew me. So it was like, okay, just combine the two. Don't worry, we can hire 90 people in 3 weeks. It'll be fine. And then what I remember is, you know, again, back to you help me, I always believe people will help each other because I would help them. And I remember the rest of Group M and the other agencies. I remember Claire Rush, who was at MEC, head of press at the time. She came and helped me do all the, she just came and worked for 3 days a week for Maxis until we hired a head of press, the amazing John Maloney. With the TV contractors, they were like, look, we know you've probably promised prices. We'll just hold the price until you've got someone in to negotiate the deals, which was Adrian Carpenter. And that's because you had a relationship. And I remember Dave King at the Telegraph saying that, you know, Lynn's kind of don't worry. Again, I would say kindness. And these are not kind people, right? These are, I mean, they are kind people. These are brutal commercial organizations.
Well, they got targets.
Who have targets.
Yeah.
And, but they were kind and fair. And I never forget that.
And you know what comes to me, Lindsay, right where we started this conversation, when you talked about what Mojo is for you and you talked about that magnetism when you're in that, and I'm getting the reciprocity of what comes back. When you show up that way, look what, you know, very Ibiza term, but the energy you're giving off, and it is the vibrancy you're giving off, people with big courtly targets who might prefer to say no, can't do, but say, you know what, yeah, we'll find a way through that particular problem. So I see how your mojo, whether you knew it as that then or not, that's what was powering perhaps a lot of this, your leadership at that particular point. And as we sort of come towards the end of an amazing conversation, thank you for everything that's come through, so much wisdom and support. Leaders now, what do you think some of the biggest challenge or question might be for leaders in right now as we step forward?
I think the biggest question is how AI is going to enable and support rather than simply replace them or panic about them or dismiss it as a fad or be scared of it. I think embracing and understanding the different LLMs and what they can do, being very actually directive about Claude will help you do this and you can probably save 20% of your time by doing it. Let's try that for 3 weeks. Feedback, how did that go? Perplexity can help you do this. Let's try that. How did it go? And move. So that actually you're taking tangible action, you're learning, you might reject some of the programs because they're ineffective for you, but learning and taking agency, taking control and making it tangible to your business so that you feel like you're working with the technology, not that you're panicking about it. And I think there's a lot of hype, obviously, but AI is definitely the most transformational technology since the internet was invented. And I just think get specific and embrace and kind of get ahead of the curve on it versus thinking it's just something for big companies or it's just going to help me write an email. I think there's lots more that AI could do. So I think getting specific and enabling and productive via AI versus waiting for it to be done to you, because then everyone will feel if you feel in control and that you're learning, you're not going to panic.
Yeah, love that. And it comes back to, you know, if there's a core value belief of yours, this sense of agency, because so many people that, and I'm sure you speak to, I speak to, feel I don't have any control, I don't have any influence about what's coming my way. And that reminder about, well, this is what you can do, this is what you can step into, I think is very powerful.
Yeah. Try it. It's a bit like, I remember clients years ago would say, oh, I'm not on social media. My kids use Instagram or on Snapchat. And I'm like, not good enough. You need to use it. You need to experience it. You need to understand the technologies and stay current. So I think, but being prescriptive, because I just think people are overwhelmed by AI. And I think the best thing, the kindest thing you can do as a leader is think about it actually with a human and a specific perspective. So I think that's really important. I think the other thing as a leader is just stay really curious and open. I'm a big believer in walking and talking meetings now. So I think actually COVID helped that to some extent. So when we were able to meet, I'd always meet people for the hour's walk. I know every inch of Hyde Park. I can tell you at any point how long it takes me to get home. But the whole idea of walking and listening and talking things through. So having meetings in a different environment, changing up the whole return to the office debate is to have the conversation. What works best for your team and your people? When you and I worked together, Rich, we were a global team. I broadly always knew where people were, but we never clocked in and clocked out because I didn't need to. I was responsible directly for a core group and they were responsible for other people. We all knew what we were doing. If someone needed 2 weeks off for X or they, that's fine, right? Because I trusted them and we all, yeah.
Yeah. And this is when you said the word trust, for me, that's what bottom line for all of this, you know, thinking to navigating up to our results, it always comes from that bedrock of trust and how we create that. Well, Lindsay, amazing. Thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast. I've loved this conversation. Obviously, we know each other pretty well, but going back through some of those stories over the years has really given me a whole load of energy as well and fueled my mojo, actually. So thank you so much.
No, you've brightened up my day. So I'll go and grab my rose quartz crystal and send a positive love back. But thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking. It's like therapy. It's amazing.
Human-to-human conversation, even over a platform like this. But it's amazing the depths that you can go to. So, yeah, really appreciate that. Thank you, Linz.
Pleasure. All right. Bye.